Welcome to the Advocacy Institute's Experts on the Record. It is September 4th, 2009, and this is Candace Cordiella, Director of the Advocacy Institute. We are very pleased to be speaking today with two experts on assistive technology, or AT, for students with disabilities. As we begin a new school year, we thought it would be a good time to talk about the role of AT for students with disabilities and to lay out some ways that access to AT can be improved. This new school year is unusual in that it also marks the beginning of a two-year period during which local school districts across the country are receiving additional federal funds to support special education as part of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, most often referred to as the stimulus bill. Our guests today are Sean Smith and Ruth Zulkowski. Sean Smith is an associate professor of special education at the University of Kansas. He has a background in the area of special education and technology, specifically towards the integration of technology across teacher preparation programs. He has authored and presented a number of articles and papers dealing with special education technology and is currently a project director on several U.S. Department of Education program initiatives seeking to further the integration of technology components across teacher preparation programs and into the lives of students with disabilities. Dr. Smith has served as an associate editor for the Journal of Special Education Technology and currently serves as an associate editor for Teaching Exceptional Children. He is the proud parent of four young children, one having an intellectual disability. Welcome, Sean. Ruth Zulkowski is the president of Don Johnston Incorporated, a leader in assistive technologies. For more than 20 years, Ruth has guided the company's mission, product development, and business collaborations, including the latest partnership with Bookshare, an online accessible library for students with print disabilities. Ruth is an occupational therapist by trade and currently sits on several advisory boards related to accessible instructional materials. Welcome to both of you, and thank you so much for joining us. Let's start our discussion. Dr. Dave Eddyburn, a leading AT researcher, has noted that just 5% or less of students with disabilities are accessing assistive technology. Do you agree with that estimate? Let's start with Ruth.
Hi, Candace. Great. Yeah, I think, you know, our data is very anecdotal from speaking with districts and just looking at, you know, what they purchase. But we do estimate anywhere between, you know, it can go as low as 0 to 1%, and then I would say about high 5 as a high percent. It seems to be higher in the suburban districts or districts where the ratio of AT staff to IP students is the highest and lowest in the urban and rural districts. Again, these are broad generalizations, and there's definitely districts out there that kind of break all those trends, too.
Sean?
I think it is difficult to assess, and based on how David has phrased it within his anecdotal evidence, I would agree as well. And just to clarify, what I mean by that is that if assessing AT is defined as having an identification process in place, it was followed appropriately, the consideration for the tool was specific to the child's needs, it was done so in collaboration with professionals and family members, it's specifically and appropriately stated on the IEP, and that there's actually a process in place to evaluate to ensure that it's effective as well as continuing to monitor in progress, then I'd have to go very much along with what the numbers Dave shared as well as what Ruth shared.
So accessing AT isn't there's a computer in the corner of the classroom.
Right.
You define it as a much, much more sophisticated process than that. Which
clearly.
I think,
and that's the intent of the law, as Dave has clearly articulated there in that piece.
Great. So given what we know about the low level of access, appropriate access, what do you think is the number one obstacle that's to providing appropriate AT supports for students with disabilities? Sean?
Well, that number one obstacle is difficult, Candace, so I'm going to give you several.
Okay.
I guess my top couple in terms of obstacles would go along with, to me, to begin with, is the process in place by the district. And certainly we have blueprints out there or purple prints or whatever rainbow color you want to use in respect to, like, the quality indicators of assistive technology. But I have to say one of the challenges in respect to identifying and following an effective process has to do with some of the personnel involved. And not to say that they're not qualified, it's rather the districts I look around with in the Midwest particularly and in other states I interact with, speech pathologists, occupational therapists, physical therapists, wonderful people, Ruth, and nothing against occupational therapists. But the reality is those folks tend to have a little bit more flexible schedules and the like. I work in a program here at the University of Kansas where our speech and language department is top 10 in the country. They do wonderful work, wonderful preparation. But the reality is they don't have, to me, the background that many of our teachers have, and nor should they, just like our teachers don't have the background many of the speech pathologists have. But if that's your team, your primary team, and that's what I generally find in terms of that process the district follows, people tend to have flexible schedules and the like. Some of the instructional needs, not some, a majority of the instructional needs where technology can offer as a solution, they're generally not at the table. Or the team, the IEP team, goes to this specialized team for AT consideration, and they don't collaborate efficiently together, so therefore some of the instructional things mentioned in the IEP aspect may be lost when the consideration of AT. So I would argue that's a primary obstacle. A secondary obstacle to me is also the lack of meaningful parent involvement, really where you're getting the parent involved as a collaborator. And I think that's going beyond AT. I think that's representative of special education in general. As an example, right now I'm working with the state and the state's OSA-funded Families Together is what's called in the state of Kansas that's supporting partnerships for families. And they're working to better enhance school and parent partnerships. And one of the areas they're trying to do is take what we've learned in professional collaboration and infuse it within parents, because so often with collaboration we talk professionals and not involve parents in that aspect. So there you go.
Ruth?
Great. And just really observed and tried to think about this really systemically. Again, I do think it starts with that consideration process. And I want to talk specifically about the high incidence population, because I think it might need to look a little different for that population. But right now with the consideration process, it's really based on the knowledge of that IEP team. And AT is a very broad field. So you might have a teacher who went to an AT workshop to be educated in augmentative communication, and when they're in an ICANN to consider AT, but if their assumption of assistive technology is augmentative communication, they're going to confidently check AT was considered, and that student really didn't have AT considered. So I really feel like it's the consideration process. I think right now we do traditionally see AT, you know, coming in as the last chance and the last, you know, thing that could be tried. And again, I think that's more evidence that we're just not considering up front, you know, appropriately yet.
And Candace, I want to piggyback on that. What I find with a lot of teams, with the IEP team, is when you ask about AT, it's generally, oh, you call Paula or you call Susan, and then the team, the AT team comes in. So I find even if they do have some training, what I find generally the district or the co-op has reinforced that when it comes to AT, you need to bring in these group of individuals.
Right.
And that's where I see that it's also a challenge, not only their limited knowledge in respect to all types of disabilities, but also time. How can they be servicing every IEP team efficiently and effectively if it's an actual AT team that's supposed to consider for each team,
right.
For each IEP?
Right. And I think the other obstacle I think often is that AT seems to be considered to be reserved for kids with the most significant disabilities, particularly physical disabilities, as opposed to a lot of these tools that we all know are so helpful for, as Ruth described them, high incidence categories, which include kids with learning disabilities, speech language impairments, that kind of stuff. So I think that's another big piece that we need to kind of get beyond. How would you like to see the current overall approach to AT for students with disabilities changed? I think you've referred a lot to the consideration process, which refers specifically to the special factors that need to be considered in the IEP development of each child who is eligible under IDEA. My sense is that maybe that whole thing kind of isn't working as we intended it to do when we put it into IDEA many, many years ago. So let's have your thoughts on that as an overall change in direction or process or both. Ruth?
Sure. Again, I think this works best for our high incidence population. I haven't thought it through for lower incidence right now, but I do think for high incidence, we really need to start being more data driven, and I think we need to mold in with some of the systems that our response to intervention and approaches that response to intervention are taking. So, for example, response to intervention does a universal screening, and I think that is the first place we need to start and utilize that data not only to identify students who need intervention, but students who need accommodation. So even, for example, if you look at the latest report from NCLD called the 2009 State of Learning Disabilities, you can see in that report that 89% of all our students are reading one or more grade levels behind. And we know that if a student can't read at grade level, they're going to struggle, you know, in their social studies class or their science class. We have 66% of students three or more grade levels behind. And to me, if we could use that data, you know, right away, that clearly screams that a minimum of 66% of these students need to be considered for assistive technology. It makes it very black and white, and then we're not dependent on the expertise of the IEP team in this area. I think then a lot of our, we have some really good processes to, you know, identify, well, what really is in the way and what tools, you know, products and services can help those students. But I think the first start is starting with that universal screening.
Sean?
Well, one, I concur completely with what Ruth just mentioned. To add to that, I would argue some additional strategies would be additional instructional technology and assistive technology collaboration. I'm increasingly seeing districts, they're doing some very good things in respect to instructional technology following the NIST standards, the ISTE standards, in respect to, you know, the student and technology integration. But it's totally separate from what we're doing for students with disabilities in reflection to assistive technology. And so I think a better collaborative effort, and some districts I'm definitely seeing this, where literally the IT and AT people are interacting regularly. Their budgets are becoming increasingly combined. I know that's a bit of a challenge. But and their training efforts are being seen as seamless. I think there's value in that, and I think that will enhance the access to technology for specifically the learners that Ruth is talking about. Back to the fact that one of the challenges I see is in respect to parent involvement, I believe that we can have better parent involvement beyond the IEP process, parent involvement where the parent is regularly involved and regularly understands, and it's a collaborative parity kind of effort that I believe will have better integration of all solutions, including technology solutions. I guess I'm seeing more and more in terms of the power of the parent there. And I also think it will enhance that AT decision-making process if you're involving the parent there.
So you mentioned budget. So let's talk as our final question today about budgets and the fact that the Recovery Act is providing an additional $12 billion, that's with a B, in support of special education over these next 2 years. The U.S. Department of Education has recommended that school districts consider devoting at least some of this additional money to purchase assistive technology that may have been too expensive in the past, and also to use some of these funds to provide teacher training on how to use that technology effectively. Do you see this happening across the country in the work you're doing with districts, Ruth?
Again, I think it's spotty, but I really see three scenarios here. I see the first one where we're seeing, you know, no assistive technology included at all, where the money is truly being allocated for one big specific project or many other special education types of needs. The second scenario I see is kind of spending in a traditional way. A lot of, you know, the past several years has been really tough for assistive technology, and so a lot of districts have had their budgets cut in half, and so they've, you know, really had some big holes and gaps, and so they're just really kind of filling up some loan inventory, that type of thing that they just haven't been able to do. The third category I would say is AT specialists really thinking systemically, really kind of taking an inventory of the key genres of AT that that they really use all the time and how to implement them and make them available in more of a least restrictive environment so that they're much more providing universal access for the students. And so they're ready for all the IEP students, you know, when they need it. And in addition to that, they're also being really proactive about thinking about their professional development plan at the same time. So, and if I had to think about how does that happen in the district, it, again, really rests on the shoulder of that AT lead person in the district. If they, you know, are a big advocate, if they have a good relationship with the special education director, you know, you see the second or third scenario. If there's no assistive technology staff in the district. Again, there are some districts that are using this as their opportunity, but the most of them are kind of staying status quo.
I'd have to agree with what Ruth has shared. And I think it's reflective of, I think, previous patterns in how they perceive AT and their knowledge base and the like. I think there are examples out there of people definitely cutting edge that are pushing the envelope in respect to thinking this across all disabilities, across all individuals in a more universal approach. But unfortunately, what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing is a little micro example, a very suburban, a district that has a lot of things in place in respect to a lot of different areas. Their AT director feels that BoardMaker is the solution. They have BoardMaker out there. The speech pathologists have been trained, and when they have more opportunities, they'd like to enhance that access to a product like that. It's not a bad product, of course, but their vision is fairly simplistic. Their training would be more towards your traditional related service personnel and not to include a larger population, and those are the efforts I'm seeing currently, and I'm seeing as kind of next steps, to me, kind of falling within more of a traditional mode that, unfortunately, I think is going to the outcomes would be continue to be challenged. So, hopeful, but what I'm seeing it's smaller cases in respect to what Ruth was sharing, and people more progressively thinking.
Right. Now, Ruth, I know your company has done some, has developed some resources that are aimed at trying to help districts decide how to spend their stimulus dollars on technology. You have a, can you tell us a little bit
about that? Sure. You know, when we heard about this, again, our goal is, you know, of course, we love when people purchase our products, but we don't love when they sit on the shelf and become cupboard ware. And so that's the big risk with something like this. And so when we, you know, saw this opportunity, we thought it was really important to get people thinking not just about what do I buy, but what's my plan? What's my plan for the district? How do I, again, improve what I'm doing and, again, think more systemically? And so we did sponsor several webinars with Bill Reeder and Jennifer Carr of Fairfax County because, again, I think they've been a really nice model district about how to implement assistive technology systematically throughout their district, and I think they're also thinking of new ways in addition, and so they're using the stimulus to think differently about that. So that was a resource, and that's a webinar that's available on our website. The other thing I would say is we really wanted to also think about assistive technology, and I think another little mini barrier is that most people view assistive technology as extremely expensive. So the thought of, you know, if more students need it, it's very scary because, you know, even with stimulus money, budgets will get tight again. And so what we wanted to do is really try to turn that whole paradigm on its head. And again, for high incidence, it's a lot easier. So we really started looking at how can we help school districts by providing the incentive to say, hey, if I know that, you know, three or four computers will be needed in a building, why don't we put it throughout that building? And then, in theory, instead of having it be more expensive for each student, actually the more students that use it, the less expensive the assistive technology comes for each student. So it's just really trying to change that paradigm of assistive technology and the cost with it.
Right. So those resources are available at your website at no charge.
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly.
www.donjohnston.com.
Correct.
Okay. Any closing thoughts? Okay.
Well, I'd like to offer one comment, and that is I do believe, if we do believe, we haven't talked specifically about universal design, but I think there are some examples out there. I think the Fairfax example, I think Montgomery County Public Schools and others are offering some good initiatives. I think from some states, there are some very state-directed initiatives in place that are offering some good examples. It's just, sorry for the pessimism on this side, it's just, unfortunately, I do believe it needs to be a shift in how we think in that model. So.
Right.
And I think this this approach is really nice because, again, my tension is I just think we need to start as a field having this dialogue and really coming up with a vision of how we can do things more efficiently and take our great learnings, and we've had a lot of successes in the past, but we also know where we're still struggling as a field. So, I just hope we continue dialogues like this and podcasts and create, a national dialogue on these issues.
Great. Well, thank you, Ruth and Sean. We appreciate your thoughts today on this important issue, and thanks for spending time with us.
Thank you, Candace, for all the great work your institute does.